Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Riverfront. This is episode 477 of the world's most dangerous podcast, where we discuss the Cincinnati Reds and occasionally Jumbo Diaz. I'm your host, Nate Dotson, filling in for the esteemed Chad Dotson. And with me this week for a special players-only episode is none other than the one, the only, Carlos Guevara. Carlos, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. It's good to be back on. It's been a while. See if I can remember how to do this.
Well, I never learned, so it should be fine. Carlos, didn't know, Carlos was a former big league player. I, myself, was a former standout little leaguer. Had an illustrious career in the 200-foot diamond in Wise, Virginia. So players only, Chad. You're not allowed on this one. But before we go any further, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button, smash the subscribe button. If you're listening to the audio version, why not subscribe? Have this sweet, sultry voice delivered to your phone every single week. We are on all the podcast platforms. And one more thing, and probably the most important thing, this show would not be possible without the support of our Patreon family. If you want to dig a little deeper, help keep this ship afloat, and maybe get a couple rewards, a couple perks in the process, why not join us? Just go to patreon.com/riverfrontcincy or click the link in the show notes. That's it, man. Let's get into it. Since the last time we had an episode, the Reds are still not in last place. that's the most exciting thing to happen this season. What are your feelings about this team right now, just from a sort of 30,000-foot view?
I think it's exactly what we expected. We're just basically using the first half of the season almost as an open tryout to see who's a big leaguer, who can stick around, who's going to be around for next year. Maybe they'll figure out to see what they're going to do with, you know, some of these prospects, trade a couple, maybe bring in somebody new. But as far as the team right now, I think it's exactly what we thought we were going to get, some bright spots from our top three starting pitchers, some rough outings from our fourth and fifth starters, bullpen going to be a roller coaster all year. And then we're gonna have some good moments out on offense. I mean, it's a fun team to watch offensively. Several of them have been struggling, but still, we're still getting those highs and lows with the Nick Senzels, Jonathan India swinging it really, really nice. But then, you know, you have Stuart Fairchild batting three hole, hitting 200 for a couple of games there. So we got that too.
Yeah. We'll get into that a little bit for sure. That's, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's this weird trial. I guess it's kind of what makes it so frustrating is that we are seeing, you know, what some of these young guys have and who's going to be able to stick around a little bit. But being a fan, just looking at this as, you know, from a fan standpoint, them just throwing away wins for the fourth and fifth starter spots, you know, twice a turn through the rotation has been so frustrating. I'm having a great time watching this team, but it stinks knowing that twice a week you're just going to have to hope the guys go and score eight runs because the Reds aren't giving themselves a shot. This Luis Sessa experiment, this, you know, the Luke Weavers and Connor Overtons of the world. It's not been a brand of baseball that anybody would want. So I don't know. It's getting frustrating. I know what they're trying to do. I guess what they're trying to do, but as a fan, I would like to see them at least try to get wins. Like, winning games is a lot more fun. I don't know. Do you wish they would have gone out?
Because, I mean, they're just so – yeah, absolutely. I wish they would have brought in, you know, a couple of veteran guys, of at least one, you know, that can help those younger guys out. But it just sucks, man. Like, it's not Luis Sessa's fault that he's having a start. I know he wants to, but clearly he's not a starter at the big league level. You know, he can stick around being a middle relief guy in that role, and I think he would be fine, but it's not fair to him. It's not fair to the fan base. It's not fair to the guys on the team that are out there busting their ass every day. You know, you get hyped for three games in a row, and then the next two, you're like, well, let's see what we can scrap together. You know, and, you know, oftentimes that's putting them in a hole. You know, by the time you got, you know, your fourth and fifth starters out there, you got your bullpen throwing half of each game. And then, you know, you're going to need them for your Hunter Green starts, your Nick Lodolo starts that are, you know, the games are closed, but your bullpen's taxed. So it's not a good cycle they got going on there. I don't know how you fix it at this point.
Well, one temporary band-aid might have been somebody that the Reds just traded away to the Rays, Chase Anderson. I don't think anybody was up here clamoring for him to be the answer, but I think he might have been a better option than some of the guys they've been throwing out there. And then they send him to a team that we all know is, you know, more well ran than the Reds are. So I'm going to keep an eye on that, but it seems like they could have kind of used the Chase Anderson type up there. I mean, as a like poor man's version of what we've been asking for all offseason. But who knows? Either way, we're stuck with what we got.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. It's not, there's no easy solutions, but they're not in last place. The Reds are 6.5 games back behind the juggernaut that is the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're only 2 games back behind the Cubs for third in the division, but perhaps most importantly, they are 3.5 games up on the stupid St. Louis Cardinals, who are in last place in the NL Central and have the fewest wins in the entire National League. You'd love to see it. Oh, man, it brings a smile to my face. Carlos, when you look at the standings, you know, how do you see that shaking out throughout the rest of the season? Do you think this Pittsburgh Pirates team is legit?
I don't think so. I think they're going to stick around till maybe around like the All-Star break around then. But then I think they'll fall back down to their means. They'll regress back. But, I mean, I think the Brewers are going to stick around, but who knows what they're going to do at the deadline too. Like, what are they going to do with Burns? Are they going to sign an extension? Is he going to get traded? Who really knows? It's a crapshoot. And I mean, as much as we like to clown on the Cardinals right now, like we know they're going to have some devil magic and go on some sort of 16 out of 17 win and get right back in it. So, it's been fun, the last week seeing everybody on Twitter just hounding on them. I decided to get in on it the last 2 days, so I've enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's been arguably the highlight of the season so far, which has had some fun moments, is watching the Cardinals struggle. But it would just be the most poetic thing for them to go on a crazy heater during the month of September just to finish one game ahead of the Reds in the standings. I'm a little more optimistic on what I think the Pirates could do. I just think they added a lot of veteran talent, a lot of you know, big league ball players in the offseason. So I don't know that they're going to be the best team in the National League hot, but I can see them making noise late into the year. I thought the Cubs would be a little bit better than they are, but I seem to have been in the minority in that opinion. So I don't know about that. But yeah, the Brewers are weird. They could blow it all up, or they could go on a crazy run and win the Central. So the range of outcomes for them is nuts to me.
Yeah.
But over the last week, we had some good news. We had some bad news. The Reds went west, had 3 in Oakland and then 3 in San Diego. They won exactly half of those games, 2 out of 3 in Oakland. It wasn't exactly an inspiring series, but we'll take it. And then they lost 2 of 3 against San Diego, 2 teams with different goals, kind of going 2 different directions right now. I feel like that counts as a successful road trip. I think if you'd asked me what I expected out of this, you would have loved to see them sweep the A's, but let's not pretend that the Reds are all that much better than the A's. I mean, they are better, but like sweeping a team is hard when you're the Reds. So what do you think? Successful road trip? What is sort of also – I want to get your opinion on sort of the difference in the two franchises right now, knowing you have history of both of them, Reds and Padres.
Yeah, I don't think you can say anything but it was a successful road trip for them to go 500. Any road trip they take, all year, no matter who they're playing, if they can come out 500, that's a win. You know, if they finish the season 500, that's a huge win for the Reds. So – it absolutely was. That was probably like their best case scenario, really, to take 2 or 3 from Oakland and then at least get 1 from San Diego, which they did. They earned that second game because it was a good pitching battle. I don't really know that Lugo was on it on that third game, but was able to get enough people out to get a lead, but. It's like you said, man, it's just their franchises are at 2 different points right now. The Reds are clearly in a rebuild and not spending any money at all. The Padres are not in a rebuild. They're in a win now mode and they're spending all of the money. And I don't think they've stopped. And it was a fun series to watch. That Ashcraft game, that was special, man. Everybody that came out of that bullpen for the Reds, they were on it. They were on their game. So well-earned victory on game two of the Guevara Cup, but ultimately the Padres, they're going to take that home with them to San Diego.
What's the trophy?
Great American Ballpark. Challenge
the Rojos. What's the trophy for the Guevara Cup look like? We got to come up with that.
I think it's just like an empty Lone Star light can. Nothing special.
Maybe crushed up. I love it. Yeah, that Ashcraft start, man. What a season this guy is having. He went six innings, gave up six hits, one run, one walk, and three strikeouts. On the season, he has now got a two even ERA, ERA plus 246. The guy has just been nails every start this season. We've seen the ups and downs from Nick Lodolo, Hunter Green. Let's be honest, mostly ups from Hunter. Those guys are having a little tougher of a time getting deep into ball games, which goes back into those bullpen issues you were talking about. But we do a little weekly Big Three check-in. What are some of your thoughts on those Big Three young arms right now? What order are you ranking them in the way they're playing right now and how you see it playing out over the next, call it, 5 years?
Right now, I'd say Ashcraft has the hot hand, just edging out Hunter Green because he's been excellent as well. But Graham, Dougie, he's been on it from the get-go. Hunter had a couple of little rough ones to start. And then, Nick is trying to figure some things out right now, which I think is going to be totally fine. And, 5 years from now, I'm still having Hunter Green at the one, Nadolo at two, and Ashcraft at three. I mean, it's not that I'm doubting Ashcraft. It's just, I don't know. He just doesn't seem to project as high as that, but he just keeps going out there and shoving, man. It's not even like close. These at-bats are terrible at-bats by these professional hitters. Big league hitters are looking really bad, swinging at pitches that are going to hit them. I mean, he's got them all twisted up.
Yeah, it's been so exciting. He's become my favorite non-Joey Votto Red. Just watching him pitch, watching the energy he brings up there is contagious, and it's sweaty, and there's limbs flying all over the place. I'm into it. Another guy that's sweaty. Really impressing me, it's real sweaty. Another guy that's been really impressive to me is Lucas Sims. I was sleeping on his ability to be, a helpful member on this ball club just because of his injury concerns. We haven't seen him in a few years. He's been lights out. He's been shutting everybody down, literally shutting everybody down because he has a zero ERA right now and his 6.2 innings pitch, whatever. But what are you seeing out of Lucas Sims? And do you think this is sustainable?
I think it absolutely is sustainable. I mean, you saw those sliders he was throwing to the Padres. I mean, he had Fernando Tatis twisted up. It was, I mean, they weren't even pretty swings at all. There was nothing good about them. He's back onto his Spider Tack Days stuff. Like, I mean, he's throwing sharp breaking balls. His fastball's moving all over the place. He's got confidence throwing strikes. It's great to see, man. Him and Diaz at the back of the bullpen for the next couple of years is nice. Hopefully, fingers crossed, they can just stay healthy.
Yeah, sending up all the prayers and sacrifices to the health gods for those two guys. Because if this offense comes around and this team does start making a little bit of noise, having that shutdown back to your bullpen is everything. It can be the difference between a 500 season and a playoff berth. So excited the Reds seem to have kind of identified those two guys and we can keep them active and healthy going forward. That series in Oakland, I do want to touch on that a little bit. The Reds had a chance to sweep. They kind of lost an ugly one in game three. But other than a pretty dominant first game, it was just kind of an ugly series. Even that first game was really, really ugly. There were errors. There was just not a aesthetically pleasing brand of baseball out there. I was really worried going into that Padres series because I thought that the Reds limped through Oakland. They did what they needed to do, but it wasn't very emphatic, I guess. So a lot of it just comes down to this offense. On their little five-game winning streak, the Reds scored 37 runs. During their six-game losing streak, they scored six runs. And then you kind of saw over the next four games, the Reds aren't scoring runs again. this offense has been super feast or famine. And I don't know if there is a solution about what to do with it with this until people get healthy or we bring somebody up. Or is that just what we're going to have to expect from this team because they have so many like tryout guys?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the way it's going to be until they decide to make some moves, whether it's via trade, trading a couple of prospects for someone, or, you know, calling up the CESs, the Matt McClains, the Ellies of the world. I don't know how long they're going to wait or what. Maybe they just want to see a couple of more, you know, ABs in the minor leagues, because they are all very, very young still. But I mean, they're going to come up here eventually, right? So it's a lost season. Let them gel together now. I don't know what the answer is, man. It's wrong. I mean, you're going to start the clock on all of them right now? You know, have everybody's time card expiring at the same time in 5 years from now, 6 years from now?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I don't have a good answer to it. I know that if we are to believe that this season is supposed to be a see what you got season, and we hope that this team can compete next year, you definitely want to get these guys some major league at bats before 2024, I would think. And I don't necessarily think those need to just be those September at bats against, you know, other teams that are already throwing in the towel. So again, just from a fan, I want to see him get some of these guys up here, yeah, because Christian Encarnacion Strand is just mashing the ball down there. Ellie's heating up a little bit. He needs a little bit more time, I think, but you can see that he belongs. Matt McClain has just not stopped. He's putting up video game numbers, and that counts like an 0-for-21 streak earlier in the year. So I'm excited to see these guys. I am far less excited to see the arms that we have in the system. Andrew Abbott aside, and maybe a couple guys in some lower levels, man, yeah. Any hopes and dreams of Brandon Williams and being that guy are gone. And I'm worried about that guy. Yeah. And I'm worried about what they're going to do. You mentioned a trade earlier. Do you think that's something that the Reds should do to address this sort of rotation depth weakness?
Not for anybody this year. It would have to be like another, you know, kind of sort of fringe MLB ready type guy, almost like they want to take a chance on, almost like a Will Benson type, but the pitcher version. You know, because I mean, they're just not going to get a whole lot for, you know, unproven prospects unless, you know, they're one of the top ones, which they're not going to do. So it's, I don't know, man. That's like this season. It's so weird. It's so difficult. Like you're using this for, you know, for the guys that are going to stick around for experience. Like I wish David Bell would have let Ashcraft, you know, stay out there. You know, whenever he said, you know, I got him, you know, we joked about it, saying David Bell's like, nah, no, you don't. You know, and they brought in whoever they brought in. But, I mean, that's a perfect learning moment against a great team. Like, let him go out there and get one more guy, see if he does it. If he loses the game, who cares? You know, I thought that was a perfect time. I thought it was a missed opportunity. You know, I mean, they won the game, cool, I guess. But I feel like that experience might have been worth it. Because, you know, if they're going to keep doing that all year, Where is he going to get the experience from, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm glad you brought that up because it's been a theme of David Bell's managing this season. There's been a few at-bats. I remember he pinch hit for TJ Friedl and Jake Fraley earlier in the year, 2 and 3 hitters that game, so that they could get these righty-lefty matchups. And if the team is already saying, hey, we're going to trot out Luis Sessa every fifth day, they're telling you that they don't care about wins and losses. So if the goal of the season is progress, why not put these guys out there in these situations and let them learn from it? They're going to take some lumps, sure, but you'd rather have them doing that in a meaningless season when you're 10 games under 500 than you would if you were in a playoff push in late August or September. So, yeah.
Yeah, man, I agree with you.
Yeah, we'll be keeping an eye on that for sure. I did want to get to this one question. We had a Patreon question from our viewer mail question from Jerry Suttoth. He said, I feel better about this team after its decidedly okay West Coast trip. I mean, 3-3 isn't much to brag about, but we've seen worse. I think that's the truth. What do you read into what we saw in California? We did kind of touch on that, but I'll just add that, you know, the fight, this team doesn't give up. They believe that they can win every single game they go out there. They are not going to be the most talented team on a night to night basis most of the time, but they don't seem to care very much about that. So anything else you want to add from that West Coast trip?
No, I think we covered it.
Yeah, me too. Well, let's talk about the biggest news of the week, I think, in Redsland, and that was Nick Senzel was named the National League Player of the Week. He went 10 for 21 last week, 2 home runs, 9 RBIs, 8 runs, 1 double, a stolen base, 4 walks, a .476 batting average, a .560 slugging, and that included a walk-off home run against Texas on April 26th, his first of his major league career. And I got to ask you, Carlos, are you on board the Nick Senzel is back hype train? And on a 1 to 10 scale, why are you a 37?
I don't know how I'm quite as optimistic as everyone else, but it's a nice little streak he's got going on. Is that why Chad's not here? He's out celebrating?
He has been on a bender ever since. Actually, it was the last 0 for 4 game yesterday that Nick Senzel had sent Chad back down into a tailspin. So
yeah, he recovered. National League Player of the Year and didn't play a National League team. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I'm not sure how they let that happen. But, you know, that bumps Nick Senzel's stats in the season. He's got a 288, 356, 455 slash line, an 811 OPS, which is somehow second on the team behind only Luke Maley, which is a weird sentence to say out loud. I don't know. There's no reason to believe this is going to be sustained, but you have to hope, right? Like, you got to be rooting for that guy. After that walk off, his interview with Jim Day, seemed like he was about to break down in tears, man. Like, you could tell how much it meant to him.
He had a long battle to come back. You know, it sucks anytime you end your season early with an injury, and then you have to start the season on the DL. You know, see everybody going, you miss opening day. That's a big deal. You just want to be out there, and it's, you know, you finally get the opportunity, and you know, a couple of weeks into it, you get the player of the week that he's never got. So, you know, hats off to him. That's awesome. Great job rehabbing, getting back, and see what you can do, buddy.
Yeah, we are. Nobody's rooting harder for Nick Senzel than us over here at the Riverfront. So we'll sacrifice a goat in his name. I love that they've been using him around the diamond a little more, getting him a lot more reps in the infield, which is where he belongs and where he's comfortable. I don't know why the team didn't do this a long time ago. But do you think that would play into someone, it could affect their offensive game when you've just sort of been getting, having to switch positions as soon as you get up to the big leagues?
It's hard for me to speak on. I don't know. I don't have the mindset of a hitter. I don't know. But it's, man, just moving everybody around so much. The defense is so bad. It's tough, man, to just all of a sudden be plugged in and start playing a different position. I mean, see Steer going over there at first base. He hasn't looked good over there. Missing a bunch of picks, you take one wrong step towards second to go get a ball that easily the second baseman, and then you got to rush to get back over to first. That's tough. You know, Senzel, you can tell he's not all the way back to comfortable being over there at third base. You know, it's still slowly coming along. You know, the footwork's not there yet. Barrero, he's been struggle bus a bunch over there. You know, he's gotten away with a lot of, you know, balls that were given hits and not errors. Mm-hmm. And then India, that's just been rough over there at second too. So golly, man, Tyler Stevenson, I didn't realize he was that bad of a defensive catcher. It's all news to me this year.
I was hoping you had some random insight that I was been trying to find about people getting moved around the diamond and switching positions and stuff. Cause I was going to chalk that up to why Tyler Stevenson has been struggling behind home plate. So maybe they need to just let him catch. Granted, he's not been great back there either.
Yeah, no, he hasn't. It's been bad, the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, up and down the diamond. So I don't know if that's something they have plans to address. I know that the shortstop prospects are all pretty highly rated defensively. So hopefully some of these young guys can It gets weird to keep saying now. We are expecting these prospects to come up and be the saviors. And that's going to be a lot of pressure on some young, unproven shoulders, too. So we don't need them just to hit. We need them to play defense. I don't know. Sure. I see there are too many directions where this can go poorly for me to be comfortable with it. But
yeah, if you're not gonna be spending money in free agency and bringing in home runs and high OPS plus, then you better be really tight defensively, and they're not.
Mm-hmm. No. Speaking of home runs, Nick Senzel now tied for the team lead in home runs. Who's he tied with? Jason Vossler.
Who's he got? Three?
Three. Him and Spencer Steer and Jason Vossler all have three home runs.
Will anyone have 10 home runs at the All-Star break?
Listen, maybe if they call Christian Encarnacion Strand up, he'll hit 10 because he's hit two more tonight. I think he has six home runs in like 11 games in AAA right now. So get these guys up already. We need something.
Some moonshots. Like, yeah.
Go look at the baseball reference page for the Reds, man. You look at those slugging percentages. It is just gross. Like Luke Maley and Nick Senzel tied the team lead with a 455 slugging. And then you have two other guys in the fours, and it's all threes from there. It is not pretty. So I don't know, man. I guess you get caught up in the wins and losses, but you know this team isn't necessarily trying to do that. But it gets tough, and it's only May the 4th. May the 5th as you're listening to this. So happy Cinco de Mayo to all of our listeners out there. Celebrate responsibly. Okay. Some other news, I guess. Henry Ramos, he's still been playing pretty well. Looking at a 310, 412, 379 slash line, 791 OPS. I like Ramos a lot. I think he's fun to watch. I think he fits in really well with this team. But what can you say about a 31-year-old journeyman on a team where all you have to hope for is, the future and prospects? So, I don't know. Any Henry Ramos thoughts?
He takes some hacks. He doesn't get cheated. Know that.
Daddy hacks Ramos. I love it.
I'm waiting for him to hit one to that ugly ass river out there in right field.
I want him to hit one in the tundra when somebody's trying to poop in it. That was a fun week last year. Whatever happened to that guy? We need that to happen again.
I forgot about that.
We did have a few roster moves and updates. The Reds called up Matt Reynolds. They moved Tony Santion to the 60-day IL to do so. I'm just going to say it. Bringing Matt Reynolds up made me mad. I was furious. It killed me. I didn't understand it. There are I don't know. I'm at my wit's end with this Matt Reynolds guy. Like, he was playing pretty well at AAA. He's played okay for the Reds this year, but this guy should not be a part of the plan unless he is just pure depth, not coming up before these guys who need these licks. I could go on an entire hour-long episode rant about how annoyed I was that they called up Matt Reynolds. So I'll let you give your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, people who are calling it, they're like, they're going to call up Matt Reynolds, aren't they? They're going to call up Matt Reynolds. We're all going to be pissed, and we all know who should be getting called up, but it's not going to happen. Sure enough, that's the way it played out. And everybody's just kind of like wondering. I mean, it'd be nice if they were transparent and be like, hey, we're not bringing any of these guys up until the All-Star break or afterwards. Like, we're going to give them a minimum of, 2.5 months down there. I mean, they don't have to say that, no, but for as much as in hot water they are with their fan base, I mean, maybe give us a little something, you know?
Yeah, that's something I've worked on quite a bit on here. It's this, we always talk about the plan and the future, and at no point have the Reds really come out and said anything regarding their plan. Every once in a while, Nick Kroll will make a comment, but it's usually because something good's happened. Matt McClain is super hot down there, and he's like, yeah, this is all part of the plan. Well, I would believe you a lot more if you had told us what the plan was before the good things started happening. So some kind of transparency would be great. And I got to tell you, man, no matter what the plan is, Matt Reynolds ain't it. Moving on from that, we talked about Chase Anderson being traded to the Tampa Bay, to the Rays. The Reds placed Fernando Cruz on the IL, activated Graham Ashcraft off the bereavement list for that one. Get well soon, Fernando. Bally Sports Ohio to retain the Reds broadcast for now. So that sucks. Way to go, MLB. Make it hard for your fans to watch games. Did you happen to see what Matt Ishbia and the Suns are doing over there?
What was the question?
Have you happened to pay attention to what Matt Ishbia, the new Phoenix Suns owner, what they're doing over there?
Oh, I saw a little something like that. He's going to put out like on regular public television, right?
Yeah, completely free.
Yeah.
They're involved in the whole Diamond Sports Group thing too. And he just said, forget it, man. I was listening to an interview with him. I'm also a Suns fan. So a little bit of homerism, but he was just saying, hey, you know, if you do the right things, don't worry about money. Money comes if you do the right things. Like, get the fans' eyeballs on this team. They're going to show up and spend the money. They're going to come to tickets. They're going to buy the merch. Like, we should just be trying to win games and create a good positive experience for the fans and worry about money later. I tweeted out. I was like, if you are a Reds fan, do not listen to this interview. You're not going to like what you hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. There was another tweet somebody was talking about. Another GM who didn't want to be named, you know, made a comment about the Padres. Like, they don't know what their plan is, what their model is, how it's going to be sustainable. And they're like, well, they had 35,000 people on a Monday night against the Reds. So that's how. Fill the park up. And it was cold. And it was cold, too, in San Diego. Those people don't want to be out in that weather.
Nope. And they were, by all accounts, it was just a big party. It's a party for every single home game out there. Oh, man, you dream of the day where we might get something like that at Great American Ballpark. I apologize for not being super optimistic, but you better believe I'll be on board once we get there. But it's seems pretty far away right now. We'll give a couple of nods to our cheerless leader, Chad Dawson. Had a couple his latest article for Cincinnati Magazine, cincinnatimagazine.com, was about Jonathan India and Nick Senzel. Sort of just getting into how he thought they are the two most important pieces for this team, or the ones he's most excited to watch this season, which leads me to ask you the question, who are the two Reds you're most excited to watch this season?
Not including Joey Votto?
Well, you can definitely include Joey Votto because I was going to ask that question if you didn't.
Well, definitely him. And then, I mean, I guess I would have to go with Hunter Green just because he's got the biggest, mm-hmm. you know, superstar potential. But yeah, it would be them or one of the other two pitchers, the starting pitchers. The hitters, I don't think any of these hitters that are here right now, anything pops off the charts as far as, you know, ceiling wise. I think ceiling wise with Ellie, he's going to be, mm-hmm. he'll be on top of that list as soon as he gets up. but, you know, everybody's just kind of like, all right, well, let's tune in and watch out and see what they do. You know, it's really only those starting pitchers that I get like, okay, I'm super pumped to see tonight's game to see what happens. The other ones are like, yeah. you know, let's just watch the game, take notes, see what happens.
Yeah, it's baseball, so it's better than nothing. We talked about it a lot last week. I went on a pretty big rant about it, but we've been sleeping on Hunter Green. I don't know why he's not getting more recognition for the season he's been putting up, not just this year, but going back into the latter portion of last year. The guy is so young and he is so good and he's been developing that changeup. And I know that's something that you talked about quite a bit was how important that changeup was going to be. And he was throwing a lot in spring training and kind of went away from it early on. Have you picked up on that being a more impactful pitch for him his last few starts?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, definitely. It's looked pretty good too, man. Like, that's why I was kind of surprised at the beginning of the year why he wasn't throwing it, because in spring training, the ones that he threw, they were fine. They look well, you know, and I kind of, you know, started going off on trying to make my points about it. And then I talked to, you know, a couple of successful major league hitters, and it's like, if he doesn't have a good changeup, don't throw it. Like, because if you throw it and it's a bad changeup, all it's going to do is, you know, make my confidence as a hitter go up because I know there's a chance I might be getting a meatball. So, I don't know, whatever he did, him and DJ working on it, figuring it out, you know, it just takes playing catch to be able to find that one pitch. Something clicks, you get that right grip, right pressure points on, you know, whenever you release the ball. it's a fun thing to watch with him, man. It really is.
Yeah, could not be more excited for the Hunter Green experience, which is saying a lot because I'm awfully excited about my boy, my adopted son, Graham Ashcraft. You mentioned a major league hitter that we have to talk about. The Giants' hole in my heart has not yet been filled by Mr. Joseph Daniel Votto. And it's just been kind of quiet on the update side from the Reds and from him lately. Do you think we have any reason to be concerned? Is Joey getting, he says he's getting better. He says he's close. Again, I'm a fan. I want that guy out there. I want to watch him play baseball as many times as I can in my life. And knowing that this, in theory, could be one of the last seasons. I miss Joey Votto. That's it. I'm going to say yeah. I miss his musk.
Yeah, I mean, we all do. It kind of sucks. I've noticed that they're not including him like on any of the promos or anything like that. It's almost like they're phasing him out a little bit, trying to get the fan base used to it almost.
Well, if that's true, it's criminal. It's ownership, marketing, advertising, player treatment malpractice.
Yeah, just pay attention. Like whenever you're watching the game and see like the promos, there's not very many with him involved anymore. Like around the stadium, I heard they're going younger with it too. So, it is what it is. But he's coming soon. He's gonna get back. He's gonna play a couple more games at Louisville. Probably won't be as long as a stint as the last one was. But I imagine we get a couple of ABs getting back to see him, and then we'll see him at GABP here pretty quick.
Well, it can't happen soon enough. You've got me heated over here telling me that's it. I'm gonna start paying attention now. You can do the same thing. You do these things at the same time. You can usher in a new era of talent and also honor one of the greatest players ever to put on your uniform. An absolute best player of my generation. It's not even close, and just – the perfect ambassador for this team. If it's true, man, like that's God, it gets my blood boiling. Like this guy deserves better. We said 1,000 times we don't deserve Joey Votto. Well, if all this is true, then Cincinnati Reds, your organization didn't deserve Joey Votto. That's nonsense.
Yeah.
But yeah. We don't need to get too negative. We're having fun this season. Sorry, I got a little hot there.
Yeah.
I get sensitive when it comes to my guy Joey. So
My bad.
We'll move on to the new recurring segment in this week's edition of Why Reggie Sanders Belongs in the Reds Hall of Fame. My one stat this week is that Reggie Sanders is higher on the club's all-time wins above replacement list than the following: Sean Casey, Chris Sabo, Dan Dryson, Dave Parker, Ron Oster, King Griffey Jr., Adam Dunn, John Franco, Aaron Boone, Scott Rowland, and Danny Graves.
Jesus.
All those guys are below Reggie Sanders and wins above replacement as a Cincinnati Red.
How many of those are Reds Hall of Famers?
I think all of them. I think every single one. Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder why. Why? There's got to be a reason. I mean, they let everybody in. They let Marty Brenneman in.
Let's go.
I got to take my stray at that guy.
He deserves all the strays he can get in this direction. I don't know, man. Chad's been beating this drum for a while now, and so we just kind of decided that we're going to reignite this conversation a little bit and see if we can't be a little part. Maybe do another billboard.
He works with the organization, right?
I know
him. I mean, his numbers are there. I don't understand. I don't know. Danny Graves getting in, to me, I'm like, okay, I give up with the Reds Hall of Fame. Like, Nick Massett was better than him.
We didn't like Danny Graves when he was here. The Reds fans were not like huge Danny Graves fans. Like, congratulations, Danny Graves. Like, by all accounts, great dude, whatever. But, you know, if you're going to let Danny Graves in, the Reggie Sanders, sure as hell, should be in the Reds Hall of Fame. So, we don't need to beat that horn too much. Mm-hmm. We'll just beat it just keep saying beat it over and over again. It's gonna put an R rating on this podcast. So let's jump into some of your mail questions. Does that sound all right?
Yeah, go for it.
Awesome. Well, as always, these questions come from our loyal patrons over at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. where you too can be a member and talk baseball with us. We talk movies and basketball and music. We talk Bengals, all kinds of crazy stuff. So get over there, drop us a line. We're having a good time. The first question comes from Seth Shaner. He says, in this week's edition of Should David Bell Be Fired? Another one of my favorite segments. I submit this question. Is batting Stuart Fairchild in the cleanup spot grounds for termination? You go first, Carlos.
God almighty. I know you got to put somebody there, but come on. Come on.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
The answer, Seth, is yes. And I'll also submit batting Kevin Newman in the leadoff spot to the committee for consideration. They asked David Bell. I got it pulled up right here. They asked David Bell why he chose to put Kevin Newman in the leadoff spot. He said, part of the rationale for having him bat at the top is that he can float anywhere up and down the order. So that doesn't make any sense. See, your reasoning for batting leadoff is because he can also bat eighth.
He's versatile. He can go for 2 for 18 anywhere you put him. You can put him first. You can put him third. You can put him eighth. Hell, you can even put him ninth and he'll do it.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
I got very
I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah. Fire David Bell. the Peacetown consigliere.
Oh, man. All right.
Next question comes from Kyle Kapler. Kyle said, like the conversation you addressed to Chad, you and Nate had on my question about the core. I bring up one point from that. Are we 100% sure Tyler Stevenson is a part of this core going forward? Has been rather brutal defensively, and so far doesn't have the offensive profile for first. Yet, alone, not very impressive power numbers coming up through the minors. Savant stats aside, it hasn't been great so far, becoming the middle of the order thumper everyone is expecting. I'm still super high on Tyler Stevenson. I think that his ceiling is through the roof. I don't think this. Our friends over at Late Night Reds were talking about maybe him being or Locked On Reds, sorry, him being a 40 home run guy. I think that got into too many people's ears. I don't think he's ever going to profile as a 40 home run guy. 20 home run is the hell? Where we're probably looking at with Tyler. Yeah, it was a wild take. I appreciate some hot takes though. It's not been great this year. By any stretch, Tyler Stevenson has not looked good. He's not looked comfortable. I think he set the record for most fastballs down the middle of the plate, just taken for a strike three. It's been crazy. But I still very much think he is part of the core. Even if he just profiles as the type of hitter he is today, he's still in the upper half of offensive catchers in the league because he's getting on base at under 400 clips. So what are your thoughts on Tyler Stevenson and how he projects as a part of the future of this team?
First, to answer that question, you better hope so. You better hope he projects as one of the cores, because that's what the Reds are planning on. He's like, if not the dude offensively, he's one of the top three that they're banking on. And I don't see that power coming. There's really not any signs of it. Like you said, maybe a 20 homer guy in Great American Ballpark. Took him away from that. I don't think so. But I think right now he's probably kind of feeding into that. He's hearing a little bit too much of, hey, he doesn't have much pop. And, you know, you see him taking a little bigger swings here and there. And I don't think that's helping him out. That's not his game. He just needs to be the best version of himself and quite trying to be, you know, somebody he's not, which is, you know, a home run hitting catcher, in my opinion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Just focus on those line drives, that gap-to-gap power, and, you know, the home runs are going to come. Just keep in those line drives, you'll be there. So I think we're both still big on Tyler Stevenson, Kyle. James Urban is up next. He said, say something nice about Jose Barrero. I'll go first on this one.
He's got great hair. Nice.
He's got great hair. The Soul Glow references are just too on point. He makes me think of Moneyball when they say they're not trying to sell uniforms. Because if you were just trying to sell uniforms, like Jose Barrero looks like a baseball player. Like he wears that uniform. Looks like a shortstop out there until the play actually happens. I have a theory. Tell me if this is nonsense. Actually, you don't have to because it is nonsense. He can't lay off the off-speed in the dirt out on the other, outside of the plate. Every time he swings at it, he chases it no matter what. What if we just bat him left handed?
And sometimes when they're in the grass, he can't lay off of them.
Yeah.
You see that one was the beginning of the week? Somebody threw a slider in the grass. It didn't make it to the dirt, and he swung at it.
I don't know what to think.
I give that to him. He knows when he makes his mind up, there's no going back on it. He's full steam ahead. I'm swinging on this next pitch, damn it.
He is not a flip-flopper at all. I think they just batting lefty, then you can't chase that pitch anymore and see what happens. It can't get a whole lot worse. So yeah, that's about the nicest thing we have to say about Jose Barrera. Rex Scott says, Chad, thank you for the tweet you posted during the West Coast road trip about when you used to fall asleep listening to Marty and Joe call games when you were a kid. I have one of those old school clock radios with the numbers that flipped over a la Groundhog Day and would set the timer for an hour or so as I listened to the guys broadcast from San Diego, San Francisco, or the viscerally hated Dodger Stadium. You helped prompt some lovely memories that reminded me why I will always follow this team and treasure what baseball gives us. Rex, that was a super nice thing. I hope Chad tunes in to hear it. I don't have much more to say about that. It wasn't a question, but that sounds like a great moment. That's why we love baseball. Joey Gaditza said, biggest surprise, biggest disappointment, and biggest why the hell is he on the team up to this point? Go. Cheers, guys.
We've answered three several times already.
Yeah. I don't think I picked just one for three, but get out of here, Matt Reynolds. We're done with you. Biggest surprise? That's a good question.
Graham Ashcraft,
yeah. I think that's your answer. Nobody's been higher on Ashcraft than I have been, but I didn't expect him to be hands down the best starter on the team. You know, the first month of the season. So
we'll go through Graham Ashcraft. Isn't he leading the National League in F4?
Yeah, I think so. Which is wild. Not surprising. Because he's the GOAT. Biggest disappointment for me is probably, I don't know, Tyler Stevenson struggling has been no fun for me. Tyler Stevenson, the believer. So that's been tough. Other than that, everybody else is kind of doing what I expect them to be doing. Any other?
I'd say my biggest disappointment is the front office lack of putting together a starting rotation.
Yeah.
I mean, that's terrible. Nobody ever should be in this. Even if you're rebuilding, you still have arms that can throw major league innings, not just bodies. I don't know. That's pretty sad.
Yeah, there are decent guys out there available for one-year deals every single year, and they just didn't do it. So hashtag get crawled. Jordan Salisbury says, gentlemen, hope you've had a wonderful week. Nick Senzel still putting the bat on the ball and getting on base. His defense seems solid. If we can dream on the week that was, he continues to play solid baseball the rest of the season. What a dream that would be. What does a healthy Nick Senzel do to the long-term plays of playing everyone next year, like Barrero, Steer, India, and all those younger guys coming up from Louisville and possibly even Chattanooga like Marte? Obviously a good problem to have, but how do you see it shaking out in terms of lineup construction? Well, I should have prepared more for this question, but do you see us start with this? Do you see Nick Senzel, if he continues to hit the ball well, sticking at one position regularly, or is he going to be sort of just Ben Zobrist all around the diamond kind of guy, super utility man?
I don't think his everyday spot would be third base with who they have coming up. Even with somebody taking Barrero out of the lineup, I think third base would be Steers, and they'd have to move Senzel to the outfield if he kept hitting at this clip, because they don't have outfielders. So I think that would be his best spot. But as far as lineup construction with all these guys, you know, on the verge of coming up, you've got to trade some of them for an established major league baseball player. Because these guys are not all going to pan out. You might miss, you might even send away somebody who turns out to be, better than what you received back, but you can't just have a bunch of mid-level major league baseball players, even though they're high prospects, high prospects turn into major league players for the most part. So a lineup full of that is basically a little bit better than what we are now. So right. I think the best way to do that is, you know, to pair them together and get an established Major League Baseball player back. So you don't have to worry about how we're going to move certain players around, because, you know, nobody wins like that. You have one or two guys that moves around like that, like the Chris Taylors of the world. Mm-hmm. You don't have a team full of them. You don't make six defensive substitutions in one half inning. Shout out David Bell.
Sure? Are you sure? Seems like that's something that happens a lot in this Reds team. Oh, God. What about second base for Senzel? Do you think they can move India off of second base, because where he's not exactly thriving defensively? Could he go out in the outfield, or maybe even just DH and Senzel takes over second?
I don't know. I think they're just going to leave India at second base for whatever reason. They have it like Dusty batting a center fielder leadoff. Like, you're just going to leave him there no matter what.
Yeah. I think that seems like what's happening. They have shown no inclination that they're even considering it. They haven't.
Because
really,
if you just go straight DH with India, that just takes his value. It just diminishes his value this early, year three, and he's a DH only.
It's no bueno. Yeah, at 26 years old and as athletic as he is, and let's be honest, a 281, 378, 377 slash line can look really good at second base. Doesn't look really good from a DH. So
yeah.
See, that's going to be fun to watch play out over the next couple of years. They're going to have to answer some of these questions soon. I mean, if you just consider the end of this year, if they brought up McLean, CES, and Ellie, like, there's some weird roster decisions right there. I know a lot of the people on Reds Twitter are so big on TJ Friedels and Jake Fraley's of the world. Well, there's going to be some odd men out once those guys come calling. So we'll see how that plays out. Hooper Pal is next. He says, rank these four baseball-themed bands. Fastball, Damn Yankees, the outfield, and third base. Well, I've only heard fastball, so they are number one, two, three, and four to me.
I've never heard of them.
All right, we're going to leave this one to Red's Twitter. Sound off in the comments. You can add us at Riverfront Cincy and let us know who you think should be ranked top four between those people, because we have done you a disservice, Hooper. And please let us know who you chose. Three more before we wrap this up. Thomas Dennis says, who in the MLB today would represent Mario Mendoza and define a more modern Mendoza line? Do you have anybody in mind for this?
Without looking at numbers and stuff, I wouldn't know. Fucking Rougned Odor, I can tell you that from the Padres, is wearing me out with that Mendoza line.
I love it.
Although he did have himself a nice TJ Friedel bunt against the Reds that last game.
Bunting's back, baby.
That's one thing the Reds should do more, is bunt more. I feel like they're not bunting enough. They need to bunt more, especially with guys in scoring position.
They need help scoring runs sometimes, but I don't know. TJ Friedel will bunt any opportunity, given any opportunity. You say bases loaded, four-run game, bunt. My answer for this one was Javi Baez. I think we have a new stat called the Baez Barometer, and it is an OPS below or on-base percentage below 300.
That's a great one.
That's who I'm going with. The Baez Barometer is an on-base percentage below 300. That guy's the worst. I had a guy in a dynasty league I'm in. That he must have been drunk trading the other night, because I picked up that rookie from Baltimore. The guy has yet to give up a run this season. And he tried to trade me Javi Baez for that guy in like 88 trade dollars or something random. I just responded to him like, you need to quit drinking and send him out a trade request. This is getting wild. What dynasty you think I want Javi Baez? Get out of here.
Yeah.
All right, Rich Thompson says, if the Reds are under 500 a week out from the trade deadline, do you trade Nick Senzel for a highly touted and huggable starting pitching and or outfield prospect if he is still producing at the plate and is healthy? No. that's kind of what you were talking about a little bit. I mean, it's not one of your studs, but you got to think, a guy with the pedigree that Nick Senzel has, if he stays hot for half the season, they're not going to get an established major league stud. But could they get somebody to fill out maybe that piss spot in the rotation? I don't know. What do you think they can get for a hot Nick Senzel?
He'd have to stay extremely hot, like borderline all-star hot, for them to get something in return to start in the major league level.
What if he wins NL Player of the Week every week?
Now we're talking.
Maybe. Yeah, I like it though, Rich. I like the optimism. If the Reds are going to trade people at the deadline, I don't know. Nick Senzel could be that guy, but we're still hoping to keep him around in Cincinnati. Brandon Kamek says, if ownership were a character on The Office, who would they be? I'm going with Kevin. Super low expectations, and he still couldn't meet them if he tried. But I could also see Phil struggling to transport a chili or a pot of chili. Another great question. I wish I was up to date on my Office knowledge enough to
yeah.
answer this confidently.
Yeah, there's so many characters on there. Like, they're Angela because they're so shitty with the press and people.
I just don't care
about the consequences of what they say. They say them anyway, and guess what? They're still there.
They got a few Michael Scotts. I want to know who's Creed. Who on that team is Creed? That's my question. Let's see. Well, Carlos, that is pretty much going to do it, man. Do you have any parting thoughts? Anything else you want to touch on before we call it a night?
Joey's probably Creed, just the grumpy old man, the grumpy veteran in the group. Just leave me alone. Let me do my work. You say something to me, I'll say something smart back to you while I'm doing my crossword.
I was hoping you'd say
that. Just to wrap it up, man, it's just watch some more Reds baseball. Let's see what shakes out. Hopefully, those guys keep tearing it up in the minor league level, and we get to see some of them sooner rather than later. Just keep giving us moments. That's all we can ask for. A couple of moments here and there throughout the week to get us through, because we know this isn't a club that's trying to compete to win anything. So just keep having individual moments, keep getting better. All we can ask for. We'll tell you how shitty it is after the fact.
Yeah, we'll be here every week to tell you how shitty it is. All right. Well, Carlos, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate you coming and hanging out with me this evening. Thank you to everyone for listening and supporting the Riverfront. Please remember to subscribe to the show either on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. And once again, huge thanks to our supporters at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. This show would seriously not be possible without their support. So, shouts to Adam Dunn. Shouts to Lisa Alberto and Wayne Krenchicki and Eli Cash. For Carlos Guevara, this is Nate Dotson saying so long, everybody.